I'm Cindy Lauper. My psoriasis was all over, even on my scalp, which may mean four times the risk for psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx works on both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX. Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again for Parenting Afternoon.
Afternoon, Joanna. Sean.
First question is this. My son will be 14 in 3 months. He's in first year. He started going out with a girl this year at the end of September. He had never shown any interest in girls before, in spite of being in a mixed primary school, so I was a bit surprised. They're still together. It's into the 5th month now. We have had chats about the importance of him keeping his group of friends. I've spoken to him about consent, doing and saying only what he and she feel comfortable with, and he says they have kissed, but seem genuinely revolted when I asked him if anything more was going on. However, when I took his phone to look at yesterday, they are messaging each other so much and telling each other how much in love they are. I feel he's really young for this. I'm just not sure what is the right advice for me to give him to guide him along.
I can actually feel the stress from the parent writing this, can't you? You know, that, you know, who's ready for this and who's not. I think often as parents, we're like, I'm not ready.
Absolutely.
Thought I had years before I was dealing with this stuff. And, you know, the fact that he was in a mixed primary school and wasn't interested in girls, he was a child then. Mm. And now welcome to this stage of early adolescence, you know, where so much changes so quickly, including this kind of stuff. I'm just struck that this relationship seems to have started quite soon into first year. Doing very quick maths in my head, a 5 month relationship in first year, that they got together pretty early on in the year. So also she's kind of, or this relationship is associated with secondary school. They've been each other's close friends and whatever else since the beginning. So I think this is just evidence that he's growing up. He's in that stage of early adolescence. I do think, though, this conversation, you know, while he seems genuinely revolted that you're asking him, is there anything more than kissing going on? I think it's good to have those conversations and to keep those lines of communication open, because he might be revolted now. But look how quick things changed from not being interested in relationships to having a 5 month relationship. So keeping, I don't want to terrify this parent, but just keeping those lines of communication open is no harm. And, you know, really talking to him about consent, respect, body boundaries, and that his relationship should feel fun. You know, and that's a way to speak to some of the intensity that I'm just picking up this parent is highlighting here. You know, all of these phone messages, they're with each other in school all day, then they're on the phone all the time. There's an intensity to this. But there often is in a first relationship. You know, it's very new. It's very special.
Yes, of course,
everything is a first. So emphasizing the importance of that spending time with his friends is equally important. But don't do it in a way that, don't be with her, be with your friends. Just talk about how it's really important he does have time for himself, because you guys are together in school all day. You do need that time with your friends. Keep or ensure he keeps engaged in his extracurricular activities so that he has a life beyond this relationship and outside of it. And that's not because there's anything wrong with him having a girlfriend or being in a relationship, but he is so young that if or when it ends, that he still has his own life and friendships and connections that are active and ongoing. That's really important. I think this, as a parent, you're doing all of the right things. You know, you're keeping in touch with what's going on, what's the level of conversation, you're encouraging friendships and, you know, keeping an eye on things. But just let him know that his friends, all of his friends, including his girlfriend, are welcome to visit at home so that you get to know this person as well. But that you're doing that within the context of, again, that conversation about boundaries, that, you know, any of your friends or your girlfriend are welcome to visit and spend time downstairs, not in the bedrooms, doors are open, but they're very welcome here. But you're getting that those boundaries stated proactively rather than waiting for someone to be in your house and then you're banging on the door, clearing your throat before you walk into a room. You know, that you get, I think, stating it. Look, you're in a relationship. Let's talk about everything now.
Yeah, yeah.
And do it proactively.
Mm-hmm. Is that an ongoing conversation? Like, because it seems like the parents had it. But and what's the balance between mentioning it more than once and nagging, or might feel like nagging?
And that can be a finer line than it needs to be sometimes as well. Yet you don't want to be that kind of always on about it, because he'll begin to tune you out.
Mm.
You know, so then you're not landing at all. He'll just roll his eyes and go, oh, here they go again. But just keeping it as an open conversation. So every once in a while that you're, and also being curious about his relationship, and being interested and curious is not the same as being intrusive and nosy.
Yeah.
That is a blurry space as well. But just saying, you know, how are things going? You know, are you feeling happy in this relationship? You know, are you happy to stay in it? You're keeping all of that. How is she? What are you guys? What do you like to do when you're together? Where do you hang out? That kind of stuff. He is very young, and it's likely that this is a very innocent first relationship. But also, teenagers are teenagers, so they're naturally innately curious and driven by hormones and physiological changes. So yeah, keeping it very much about growing up that conversation about sex and body boundaries and all of that, and respect and consent, that is very sensible to be doing. Whether your kids are in relationships or not, that's a sensible thing to be doing at this age.
Yeah. The inevitable, though, will probably happen, and his little heart will get broken.
Or he'll be the breaker of the heart.
Or he'll
somebody's
be the
heart will
the heart.
Get broken.
Yes.
And I think, don't try not to. Yes, I think there is an inevitability.
I suppose not mentioning that in advance is probably not advisable.
Don't mention that. But just be aware of the nurturing and minding that can come in when something like that happens. It's also possible that, you know, this is very exciting right now, but it may run its course. It may not sustain that level of excitement, and he might just work his own way through it. I think just keeping an eye on it is a sensible thing to do.
But maybe have kind of words prepared for if that happens, or is there anything you can say?
I mean,
there's
not. Do you know what I would say? Don't have words prepared. Have actions prepared.
Yeah.
You know, because I think when something like that happens, you're really talking about moving it into a doing the communication rather than speaking. Because when you're upset, you're activated by distress or upset or heartbreak, you really believe no one has felt the way you do right now. Mm. So if you come in with, oh, look, you're only young, and you know, the best well-intended words will inevitably be wrong. Instead, come in with the hot chocolate, the cuddle, the hug, the favorite dinner, the minding. Come in with the nurture, and that says a lot without you opening your mouth.
Yeah. Next month, we will be minding our 2.5-year-old granddaughter while her parents are away. We have minded her many times before, and she's always happy to stay overnight at our house. My only worry is that this time we are minding her for a bit longer than we have before. It will be 5 nights, and our previous record is 3 nights. It doesn't sound like a big difference, but I think to a little person with no real understanding of the calendar, it may feel like a long time. I'm wondering what's the best approach if she gets upset because she's missing Mammy and Daddy. Should we have video calls with them, or would it upset her more to see them and not be with them?
Oh, I mean, I just think how lucky is this little one to have grandparents who are so tuned in and so aware. And you clearly have a really lovely relationship with her. She's spent up to 3 nights with you. I'm with this grandparent. I think there is a big difference between 3 nights and 5 nights when you're 2.5. Also, when you're the grandparent, by the way, that's an epic overnight plan. So I think it's really sensible to plan ahead like this, and forward planning is always a good thing. I would say at 2.5, they're not great with phone calls. It's a little bit abstract, and they see you, but they can't touch you, and you're talking and you're asking questions, but they want to run around, and you'll end up on your video call spending more time looking at the ceiling or the sofa cushion because they just don't really get it.
Yeah.
So it might be a better idea to have, you know, mom and dad pre-record a video message of them singing her favorite song that she can then sing along with, and she can replay it, or reading her favorite storybook, and she can replay it and replay it. That could be a really effective way to do it. And I'm not saying don't call her, because if she's looking to talk to them, yes. But at her age, I'd be thinking you might get a good minute, minute and a half out of that call. Whereas the video that's singing a song and reading her a story, she will listen to, and she has that sense of still having them through that. And they can do that in advance of going away. And then as grandparents, you can play it whenever you think she needs it. I would also ensure proactively that whatever her preferred comfort items are, whatever stuffy or blanket or pajamas or whatever it is that she really likes to have at night, that you have everything, even her favourite sippy cup. You know, you might have a copy of that in your own house, but for 5 nights, making sure it's her things that are there. The call I'd save until she needs it, as I said, but I also think, and this would only be if she's really struggling because she's very young, but a visual chart that has a photo of mom and dad and a photo of her with you, and you could just draw a line between two houses at the, you know, and every day you, with blue tack at the back, just move mom and dad's photo closer. So she visually sees they're coming back, rather than counting down days that they're away, which is just reinforcing they're away from me, they're away from me. The visual should be about them coming back so that she can see they're getting closer each day. I would only use that with a 2.5-year-old if she really, really needed it. She likely won't need it. And if she does, it could be day 4 by the time she needs it. And you'll be saying they'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah. And the difference between 3 days and 5 days to a 2.5-year-old.
I mean,
is it? Yeah.
It depends. I mean, it is a lot when you think about it. It's nearly a doubling.
Yes,
of the time,
true.
If you were to think about it that way. She's really little, and it's the bones of her week away from them. And if she's not done it before, it is uncharted territory for these grandparents. She clearly has a good relationship with them, is very comfortable and happy staying there. So nobody should also be upset, by the way, if she's not upset. This is the other thing to be aware of. Like we plan proactively.
She didn't miss us.
Exactly. But, she's going to be upset. But also, what do you mean she didn't need a call or miss us at all? All it means is that she has a really good connection and attachment with her grandparents. She feels safe. She feels loved. And if she needs them, call them.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that would be funny if they came back upset. Now, this is a kind of a complicated one. My daughter is 6 years old and 4 months. She's still having bedwetting issues. Her sister, who's 2 years younger, night trained very fast and has never had an issue. We were concerned about this, so we took her to see a consultant 8 months ago. They said they weren't overly concerned as she isn't 7 years old yet and it's quite common. They did send her for a scan of her kidneys and nothing showed up. But the issue is persisting and we've no real plan of what to do now. She was wearing a nighttime pull-up every night until about 2 months ago where we decided to take them away because we're conscious she needs to train her bladder at night and the signal needs to go to her brain that she needs to wake up and wee, etc. And she can't be relying on nappies. We're strict about the usual things, such as no liquids after 6 o'clock, making sure we lift her for a wee when we were going to bed or at 11 p.m. But a lot of nights, maybe 3 out of 7, even though she wees before bed at 7:30 and again at 11 p.m, she will still wet the bed any time from 2 to 4 a.m. We then have to change the bed and there's a whole disruption to everyone's night's sleep. She's also very annoyed and embarrassed that this is happening. I explained that everyone's bladders develop at different times and hers is taking a bit longer to develop. It doesn't help that she can see her younger sister is having no issue in this regard. The poor little thing.
It is hard. And just, you know, the idea that you've taken away the pull-up or the nighttime nappy, I'm just curious, was that advised by the consultant you saw? Because I'm not sure that you need to do that at this point in time because you're talking about how she needs to train her bladder. You don't yet know if that's something that is the root cause of this. You know, bedwetting, I mean, they're doing all the right things. They've seen the consultant, you're no drinks after a certain time, picking her up before you go to bed. Like all of the right things are being done here. And yet she is still. So if this is a child going to the toilet at 7:30, being picked up to go again at 11, more nights than not, she's still having, you know, overprojection of urine to an accident between 2 and 4 a.m. So that's quite a lot. So I don't know if she can necessarily just train herself out of this. So there's a couple of things to look at. I mean, medically, it's often advised to wait until children are over 7 because a huge percentage of children do bedwet under 7. And then it do outgrow it.
Mm.
You know, so there tends not to be that, okay, let's wait till they're seven. And that does seem like the advice the consultant has given. Now, you're not that far off that, you know, just to say, and I hear you counting down the months, these parents, 6 years, 4 months, you know, you're very cognizant of that. And further investigations and what that would involve is seeing, does she, you know, not have enough of that hormone that slows down urine production at night? Is she such a deep sleeper? She's just not hearing the cues. And these are the reasons this happens. I mean, really, you look at three main reasons for bedwetting. There is an issue with the communication between the brain and the bladder, or the bladder and the brain, depending on which way you look at it. For example, if the bladder signals to the brain that it is filling or full of urine, but the brain doesn't signal back, hold that till morning, you will get bedwetting.
Okay.
And, you know, equally, if the brain isn't, because she's such a deep sleeper, for example, if the brain doesn't hear the cue from the bladder, hey, I'm filling up, it doesn't know to send back that signal. So often you look at, how is she a very deep sleeper, you know, and just not hearing those cues. That could be an issue with it. We also look at, is there any other stress, trauma, anxiety going on? Any life event, always from the perspective of a six-year-old, you know, that could be causing upset. But that, Sean, would typically be a short-term regression in toileting.
Yes,
if it's something like that, rather than something she's never acquired. And then you would also be looking at medical issues that underline, which are much rarer, but also are typically not really coming into focus until a child is bedwetting over the age of seven.
Okay, right. So there still might be a physical cause.
Yeah,
this.
And it could be something that, nothing catastrophic now, or anything, but it could be something that just requires medication or something else. And keeping in touch with your consultant is the best way to go about that. The other thing you'd look at with bedwetting is there a family history? If one of you parents bedwetted as children around this age, she's more likely to do it. So there can be that genetic component as well. And I'd also be curious, you know, does she urinate often during the day? So, you know, is she a child who's so busy and active that she's not going to the toilet a lot during the day? And so there's quite a buildup of urine then at nighttime. Or if you've a child who does tend to go a lot during the day, then maybe that's also why she needs to go a lot at nighttime. You know, that the urine production isn't slowing down at nighttime when it typically would. The best, I mean, and I think you're doing it, and you've outlined how, now, fair play to you, but 2 to 4 a.m., you can be as understanding as you like. You're tired, you're cranky, and you'd rather it wasn't happening. And she will pick up on even micro cues about that. And she is embarrassed and self-conscious. Don't rule out the use of the pull-ups so that that's prevented at this stage. And you can review this then again in a few months' time. No blame, no shame. We don't blame her. We don't shame her. You're very positive about this. Be really honest with her what's going on. Look, you know, you're right. Some kids, this does happen, and some kids, it doesn't. You're definitely not the only one. And we are going to work out a solution. We're trying to better understand it. But you're not doing anything wrong here. This is just the way it goes.
Mm.
And there's lots of kids this happens to. Be really sensitive to her feelings. I really felt, you know, when we're thinking
with the younger sister. Oh,
I really felt for her with that, you know, and that self-consciousness. And I would say move to protect the bed, because even if she's not wearing a pull-up and the advice you've received is that she shouldn't, you can put a protective layer on, you know, one of those soaked sheets under the sheet, so that if and when this accident happens, you're just taking that out and putting a fresh one in rather than having to change the entire bed, you know, and just keeping the mattress protected with it. And as parents, just try to stay positive that this, more often than not, this does work itself out by the age of seven or soon after.
Yeah. Trish says, my daughter wet the bed till she was 11. Main thing I would say is never get mad with her.
Yeah.
Just change the sheets and smile.
And have the sheets maybe out, you know, that you're not rooting for anything. Just almost have your so that you in autopilot can just go, no big deal. Here's what we do. And have a changeover. You might even want to have spare, you know, sets ready to go with the duvet. So you're literally just lobbing it on top.
Yeah, indeed. Or maybe, if they, unless they got official advice to do the pull-ups, it looks very much like maybe there would be no harm for a
I think she's showing she's not ready yet.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, to kind of say, well, you've got to get ready. I think when a child is saying, I'm not ready to do this yet, just hold tight. You can always revisit this in another month or 2 months. Wait till she's that bit closer to seven. And I don't want to keep emphasizing seven like it's a magic number, Sean, yeah, and she's going to wake up on her seventh birthday and this will never happen again. But it does open up more conversations around, okay, well, it's still happening. Go back to your consultant then and revisit it and do it, see if there's any more exploratory stuff that can be done.
Yeah. At the end of every meal, our 2-year-old throws her plate on the floor, even if she enjoyed the meal. She's very fussy, won't eat anything she doesn't recognise or has any sauce on it. Everything must be separate. It is exhausting for us to prepare a meal like this. And also we feel anxious eating together because we don't know when she will suddenly and without warning lash the entire plate against the wall or the floor. It has made mealtimes very nerve-wracking. I thought it might help to feed her separately without the rest of the family, as I'm concerned there is a performative element to her actions. Would this help? But then I'm worried that this will lead to fragmented meals. It's important for us to all sit down together. Despite the fact that a plate might hit you in the head.
Yeah. I mean, it's performative is a good word, but there's also something communicative about it. Mm. 2-year-olds, you know, they're still developing communication skills, so they can be clumsy in how they convey things, let's be honest, but they can also be highly effective in how they use behaviour to convey something. I was wondering, is it her way of signalling, I'm done? I'm done with this
Could
meal.
Be, yeah.
You know, just like you toss something to the side. So it's not done to be destructive or to push boundaries, nothing conscious like that, but it's just a way of saying I'm done with it, so it doesn't need to be in front of me anymore. And if that's the case, model other ways for her to do that. Like, make sure she hears you say, no matter if there's food still on your plate, that you say, oh, I'm all done with this now. It stays on the table because she's only 2. So she needs to see it repeatedly to learn something like that. I mean, definitely get a plate with a suction quality to it and stick it to the table because now 2-year-olds can be strong. And,
they can. But those suction things are so handy.
But they're so good. Yeah. And even if she makes one attempt at throwing it and it doesn't come off the table, you'll be on it really quick and be able to step in and go, no, the plate stays on the table. And you want that no to be gentle but firm. No. And then you say, plate stays on the table. Very few words, very clear in what you're saying. Okay, and your face and your tone of voice should match all of that. And then you might say, I'm all done with my food. Are you done with your food? And if she says yes, say, I can take your plate away. So you're going to be almost role playing this out with her and modeling it. Keep her engaged, because I wouldn't separate her from the family for meals, by the way, because she's 2 and she will not link it to what she's doing. That cause and effect piece isn't there. So she won't understand the isolation at her age. And she'll only be hanging around you all then when you're eating and trying to get up at the table. Yeah. And I want more, you know, to help her join in. I think keep her at the table, but keep her engaged with chat, with singing, with playfulness, with making up stories, with changing your voice, being playful at the table as a form of distraction and redirection. And keep an eye on her when she's looking like she's getting to that finished place, so you can preempt as best you can. If and when the plate ends up, and I hope it's a plastic plate, but ends up on the floor in the food, you get her down and you involve her in cleaning it up afterwards. Okay, so that she is part of that and that she has to pick up her food and do that. And you again say, we do not put food on the floor. Food stays on the plate. You're just going to have to keep at this. I feel though, Sean, it's her way of signalling she's done.
Yeah. The you know, and like she says, she's a fussy eater and things won't touch. You know,
but she's 2.
Yeah, that's not that. I don't know. I often think that kids go through a phase when they're young toddlers that they'll eat anything, and then they suddenly get into the fussy stage.
You're totally right. Yeah.
Yeah. Is too early to be fussy?
No.
Or is that
not
pretty normal?
Really?
Yeah.
No. It's, you know, and it's not unusual that a 2-year-old would be very particular about what the food should look like and taste like, and it shouldn't touch. And I don't want any of your suspicious sauces. I just want it to taste exactly like I want it to taste. And because they also are exerting control developmentally. This is the era of the no. They love an I'll know and I'll decide and I'll do it, because so little in their lives is within their control that where they can, and it tends to be eating, toileting, sleeping.
Yeah.
Those are the realms they'll play out control dynamics, because those are the things they ultimately, it's about their body, they do have control of.
Yeah. It's kind of circle of life in there.
It
someplace.
Really is. Yeah. Yeah.
Joanna, thanks a million as ever. Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
Back pain and stiffness made mornings rough.
Pain made it tough to sleep until I started Cosentyx.
Cosentyx secukinumab is the number one prescribed treatment for adults that targets IL-17A, a molecule that may play a role in inflammation that contributes to ankylosing spondyloarthritis or non-radiographic axial spondyloarthritis, two types of inflammatory arthritis of the spine. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com. Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
I got real relief with Cosentyx.